The following program is intended for mature audiences.
What do you say we have a rock and roll party?
You're listening to Basically a Sports Show.
Follow us on Twitter at Basically Sports.
Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes.
And check out every episode of the show at basicallysports.tumblr.com.
Now here's your hosts, Zach,
Greg,
Mike.
And you're listening to Basically a Sports Show.
Talked about last week about how dumb the made-up city names are.
Yeah.
Oh, Grip City, the land,
the
bee's nest or whatever that is they call Hornet. Buzz City.
Buzz City, yeah.
What are some of the other ones? Or are those it? Is everybody else kind of like, you guys all are stupid and we're not going to do this? Or are there more that I just can't remember?
Well, like there were, like I remember for a while there, the Pistons had a Motown. Motor City.
That's legit, though. I mean, they've been called the Motor City for a very, very long time. Kind of like the city with Golden State. I mean, no matter how dumb you might think it is, at least it's got historical precedent behind
it. Right, but do the Pistons need a Motor City jersey? Like, you can sell it.
No, they don't need it.
They can sell it.
No.
Do you need to wear it? No.
No. No. I agree with that, but I'm just talking more in terms of...
I'm telling you right now, I would buy the fuck out of a... Los Angeles Clippers, like Clippers Nation jersey. Like if they made a Clippers Nation jersey, I would buy one.
No, at the time, they would have gone with Lob City. Remember, that was their...
Oh, right, right, right.
Oh, right.
Because of all the alley-oops they had.
So, but, I mean, as a Southern California resident, Zach, do you ever just, you know, drive through the Lob City?
No.
Okay.
How about this? Clippers Bus Stop. I'd buy that. Or Clippers Corner, or
it's good. It's going to be back down to living room, you know, and you know, probably by the end of next season.
Yeah, I just know that the first person I run into that refers to this area as the land, I'm going to smack upside their head. No one's ever called it that.
You saw the Cavaliers logo or uniforms leaked,
right?
As far as we know, the Association and Icon uniforms will not say the land, but I can assure you that uniform probably will.
If they do the fan thing or the players' input, so that's
the community. There's Association, Icon, and then there's community and players.
But the beauty of community is that you can put any bullshit out there that you want and blame it on the fans. And who's to say that you can't really prove otherwise, right?
Here's what the Cavs community jersey needs to be. It's got to have contrasting stitching to represent the craftsmanship of Cleveland. It's got to have the land across the front instead of the team or city name, and the land needs to be in that new Browns orange to represent the passion of the dog pound.
There you go.
And on the side of the shorts will be a bulldog wearing a Cleveland Browns jersey holding a Cavalier sword.
All right. Well, send that in, right?
And that will be the community edition of the Cleveland. And with the Cavs' luck, they will win the title next year wearing them.
Of course. Of course.
And they will be enshrined forever.
But that's my point. Anything that you want to come up with, you can always blame it on the community. If it doesn't go over well, that's what the fans wanted. I mean, you know, they didn't even have to take any fan input. They can just try stuff. I don't know. So back to my original question. So there's the land, Lob City, Rip City. What is it, Buzz City?
Buzz City here.
Well, the thing about that is that Charlotte actually has a real nickname. It's the Queen City.
Right.
But then they're like, no.
Same with Portland. Call it, if you put a uniform out that said the Rose City on it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, great.
See that's the point I was trying to impart to some Blazers fans, being like, if I was visiting Portland and I saw a Blazers t-shirt that said like Portland City, like that said something like Rose City Basketball, I just might pick that up.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not buying something that says Rip City because no one's going to know what it means. And it just looks stupid.
I don't know.
The Bulls are their affiliate, their D-League team that made like a Windy City.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that's bad, but it does have historical precedent.
I know. Hold on.
I'm trying to come up with ones that are so clearly and obviously made up, like the land, Rip City.
No, that's right. The Bulls, now officially known as the Gatorade League team, is the Windy City Bulls.
I guess.
The Six. We forgot about the Six with Toronto.
Yeah, but no one. Oh, okay, well, the Six is a bullshit name anyway.
Right,
but at least
that's what I'm
nobody.
Saying.
But nope. But the Raptors haven't put it on a jersey.
Not yet. Wait for the. Community jersey is going to be a Drake jersey.
Oh God, you're right. It's going to be so.
Yeah,
Drake.
I keep. That's what I'm warning you, man.
It's
when you throw community in there,
save the Six.
When you throw community in there, anything can happen. All bets are off.
By the way, speaking of Drake and the Raptors, I really wanted that first Drake. I've always wanted that first Drake Knight shirt. It's like black and it's got the dribbling Raptor logo on the front in gold.
Yeah.
I've always wanted one. And goddamn eBay prices, man. Like really, for something that was a free giveaway, if you showed up,
mm-hmm.
they are just insane.
What are they asking for them?
Last time I saw something was around like $75 Canadian.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, forget that.
Yeah, no. Not doing that, the community is going to be so Drake.
Wait, I have to interrupt the show, guys. An important announcement to make here.
Oh.
In 5 years of doing basically a sports show, we just broke the record for the most consecutive minutes we've ever talked about the NBA. Continuing from last show to this one, we have set the record. All right, go ahead, continue.
I just wanted to, say that, I don't like the Raptors in black and gold, but I accept that it's happened and will probably keep happening. The only thing that I can really hold out hope for is that they don't just slap the Six on a Raptors jersey, because okay, first of all, that's just unfair to the Sixers.
Well, they're the Sixers,
right?
The Raptors
important designation.
Six.
You're just the Six. You're an inanimate Six. You don't do anything.
Well, the
Sixers are sixing. They're sixering or whatever you would
I'm
want to call it.
I'm surprised that the Raptors, because it's five guys on a court, and then you could call somebody the Sixth Man. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised that they haven't done something like that with the fans, calling it the Sixth Man or something.
Or choose some fan at random to be like the Sixth Man and have him take a picture of Drake each night.
Yeah. He is the ambassador, right? You
know, global ambassador.
Yeah.
Global ambassador Drake. this whole thing is just going to be stupid.
I'm going to go back to it again. It's our fault. We got no one to blame but ourselves.
And if I can go on a bit of a rant about the Raptors uniforms, all of you people who were born from like 97 onward who claim you grew up in the 90s, no, you didn't, because I was born in 87 and I sure as hell didn't grow up in the 80s. But all you people like born in the late 90s who are trying to justify your love of that purple uniform with the zigzag pinstripes and the giant dinosaur on the front need to realize that I was in the Target demo when those things were released, and they were cool for about a year before everyone started to realize, oh, the team kind of looks like idiots, don't they?
Kinda.
So, yeah, just putting that out there.
I think they're cool. I think the biggest NBA change that we that came out in the last week has to be the Pacers, though.
Yep.
And I can't find a nice thing to say about these other than they'd be a great uniform for the Michigan Wolverines or the Cal Golden Bears.
I really like them, actually.
I do, too. I love them. The only thing,
the Indiana Pacer.
That's one of my favorite parts of it. I love that. The only thing that I really don't the only thing that I really don't like is that the stripes don't go all the way down the side, doing the old kind of a knockoff on the old Marquette and Cavs stripe pattern. Not exactly the same thing, but that's my only problem with them. I love the Indiana Pacers around the numbers. I think they look really cool.
Zach, you don't like how they grow basketball there?
I understand they do. And that's why, like, I don't know. I don't know what's dumber, them wearing these or them wearing those Hoosier uniforms from last season when they wore the Hickory High.
Oh, yeah.
Season.
Okay, right. Well,
that was pretty stupid.
Yeah. Let's not forget the fact that Hickory, they weren't real. Based on a real team, but not a real team. That would be like wearing Miami Sharks uniforms for the Dolphins to do that.
Yeah, but you know what? It might actually liven the Dolphins look up, actually.
Well, not anything would help at this point, right? I really do. I like these a lot. I think they look really cool.
I think they're a college uniform. I don't think that's an NBA basketball uniform. It doesn't work for me.
See, I understand what you're saying, but in my mind, at least, when it comes to basketball, there's no distinction. Like in college and the NFL, there's clearly, maybe it's just in my imagination, but there's a difference between an NFL look and a college look. In basketball, I think they're all just basketball uniforms. I don't draw the distinction between college and NBA because there's not a lot of real estate to work with. So there's only so many things you can do. So I kind of give basketball a pass on that.
But I think like if you changed Indiana to Michigan and Pacers to Wolverines, that'd be a great alternate jersey for Michigan to wear.
Yeah.
I just, like you said, I don't like the stripes going down like and not connecting.
Yeah.
I think that's one thing. Because when you mentioned those stripes, what did you mention? Marquette.
Right.
That's sort of with all the stripes.
I also said the Cavs, too, though. The Cavs and Marquette wore that look. I think the Cavs actually did it first, believe it or not, with the old you'd have to go back to like 72, 73 era for the Cavs where they wore those uniforms. And they kind of became a thing. I mean, I could be wrong, but I think that they were about the same time. So it's not unprecedented in the NBA, is my point.
Yeah, but I think with this, though, too, it's the Indiana Pacers trying to kind of leech off of the look of that high school and college type look of basket. It's if the Minnesota Wild came out with a Minnesota high school hockey jersey and like wore it. That's what this is the equivalent of to me. They're not trying to make themselves look like we are the professional basketball team in the state. This is our state likes high school and college stuff. So here's a jersey that kind of looks like a high school college jersey. Please buy it.
I can see that argument. That I'm not going to disagree with too much because I can certainly see where you can see it that way. Go ahead, Mike.
To me, I just like them because you've got a strong basketball tradition in Indiana. I think you're right in that they're trying to look like a high school or college team. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing in this particular case, though, just because of how Indiana is. And I think that I think one of the reasons I like them is that it's a traditional basketball look in that regard, but it also doesn't feel overly derivative of anything else.
That's exactly what I think.
Like, it doesn't look the Tampa Bay Lightning tried to go for a classic hockey look, and they ended up just being derivative of the Maple Leafs and Red Wings. And I think it could have been easy if you were designing Indiana Pacers uniforms and you're like, because of basketball's history in the state of Indiana, we're going to go traditional. It would have been very easy to end up being derivative of someone else, but they managed to be traditional and not be derivative. And I think that's really hard to pull off. So that, I think, is one of the reasons why I do like them.
See, that's what I like about it, too. I think that you've got a new uniform here, which has definitely got some new uniform stylistic choices in it. But it's also kind of an old school uniform, and to pull it off and make it work, I would think is extremely difficult. And they managed to do it here, where it's an old school traditional look with a lot of new elements to it, and that's what I dig about it. It's just like it can be done, and I think this is a good lesson for everybody else out there that wants to try to do a new uniform and still maintain traditional elements. This is a good way to do it.
By the way, the stripes on the sides of the jerseys going down.
Mm-hmm.
They represent cornfields or something, right?
These dimensional lines invoke the imagery of Indiana farmland and are a physical representation of growth, tying into the notion that basketball is grown in Indiana.
Well, that's just some bullshit.
Because when I see lines down the side of a jersey, I think, oh, man, yeah.
Okay, so let me ask this then. So where the stripes stop, that blue spot in between, is that to represent the road you're riding down when you're surrounded by cornfields on both sides? Is that what that is?
I don't know. You know what?
That's what they should have said. I would have bought that. I would have said, okay, I can see that. Have you ever been through Indiana?
Is that panel sort of in the shape of Indiana?
On the side?
Kind of.
Is it really? Well, you know, that would be interesting if it were.
The thing that I don't give two craps about it's supposed to be being cornfields or whatever bullshit Nike wants to vomit out onto the internet. I'm just mostly – what I like about the stripes is that, like I said, I like these because they've got – they're traditional but not derivative. One of the problems I had with the pinstripe Pacers uniforms from the 2000s was that I thought they were a bit too conservative for a team with the name Pacers.
Yeah.
And I think that the striping here helps in that regard because the uniform on the whole is very traditional, but that striping gives it just a bit of a modern touch to kind of tie it into the name Pacers. So these uniforms just work for me in a lot of ways. It does remind me of high school and college basketball, which I think works in Indiana, and it's got a bit of a modern touch to work with the team nickname. I like it, all things considered. I really don't have much to complain about in terms of what's being presented, although you know they're going to use those Hoosiers uniforms for the community uniforms. So
let's hope not.
What do you think of the alternate logos?
I you know, like I said, I think I posted this on the boards, but the Roundel one got me because I'm an easy mark for a Roundel. It may suck, it might be terrible, but I'm going to like it anyway.
Indiana was a state before 1894.
Oh yeah.
Okay, so what's the 1894?
Basketball was invented, right? Is that when basketball was invented?
Possibly, but basketball, I know for a fact, was invented by a Canadian in Massachusetts.
No.
So I'm not seeing how Indiana.
Dude, basketball was invented by Larry Bird's great-great-grandfather in French Lick, Indiana. Everybody knows that.
I don't think that's true.
Okay, well, it might be.
What year was basketball created? Let's see.
Indiana was a state before. Yeah, because they were part of the North during the Civil War, so they had to be a state, right?
According to Wikipedia.
They were one of the first states after Articles of Confederation, yeah.
According to Wikipedia, basketball was invented by James Naismith in 1891.
Okay. Was 1894 perhaps the first year they played some sort of organized basketball in Indiana?
Did Nike blurt out some stupid Nike speak explaining the year?
I haven't seen anything.
Indiana became a state in 1816.
Yeah, okay. That's not it. Well, all right, let's try this. 1894 plus Indiana basketball and see what we come up with. Because this makes no sense. If it was invented in 1891.
It wasn't even invented in Indiana.
That was the first year of basketball, is what I'm saying.
Okay.
First basketball game in Indiana happened March 16th, 1894.
There you go. That's what I thought. That makes sense.
Yeah.
I think just one more thing on these. If they weren't going to do this, I think they should have gone back to these. I just put a link in the thread. They're the old ABA Pacers uniforms. I love these. These are great.
I like the Flojo uniforms.
Flojo.
See, the only thing about those Pacers uniforms is that the Hawks wore the same exact thing.
So did the Bullets. No, not the exact same thing, but there were the Bullets, the Hawks. and the Pacers all had a, like the side racing stripes. That was a thing for a while in the 70s.
So yeah. In terms of the alternate logos, I actually don't like well, the Roundel one I can take or leave. It's fine. I think the We Grow Basketball here is kind of hokey, but whatever.
Oh, kind of?
I really don't like the State of Indiana with the basketball and the star in it, though, because – and I think this really is apparent when you look at the full court design. It just gets really repetitive next to the primary logo.
Yeah.
Like, it's just not different enough. Like, this is actually my favorite of the new logos that was unveiled, and it's not even in that article, but – and so I'm guessing it won't be used much, but it's just the State of Indiana done up. Yeah, done up in stripes. So, like, I dig how that looks, but you probably couldn't really use that. It seems like it would be kind of a pain to embroider. But yeah,
well, because that you see that in the background of that logo.
Mm-hmm.
If you just take away the star and the ball.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't get why it's not shaped correctly either. What's that? Is it supposed to be some sort of a?
It's like a stylized. It's like how the Dallas Stars used to have an alternate logo that was the shape of Texas, but it wasn't shaped correctly. It was kind of angular.
Okay.
Like, because state outlines can be a bit weird because they follow, like, rivers.
Yeah. So, well, there are some states that are very distinct looking, like Texas. If you had to pick, like, the best state shape, Texas is it. It's got the coolest one.
Well, Greg, come on. I mean, it's got to be Wyoming or Colorado.
Yeah, right.
That's what I want to see. I want to see the Avalanche release an alternate jersey that's just like their logo inside of a square.
Well, no. You got to go with New Mexico or Arizona because they decided we're going to do a little bit of like an angle on our bottom line of the square. And, you know, get a little crazy with things. But anyway, overall on these, I like the uniforms a lot. You know, are they going to be like among my favorites in the league? No, but with the uniforms being what they are these days, I'm always expecting the worst. So when something like this comes along, I'm like, oh, I'm very happy with this. I like them.
I would say my only real critique is that I think the Phoenix – not Phoenix. Where did that come from? The Indiana Pacers text – and numbers are a bit too high.
Yeah, like I agree with that.
They're kind of touching up against the color. I would lower them just a few spaces. But other than that, I dig the design.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, I guess I'm kind of in the same boat as Greg where, you know, when you hear new basketball uniforms designed by Nike, you're not exactly filled with optimism. So when something comes out that's kind of restrained and doesn't try to do too much unnecessarily, it's kind of like, oh, well, they kind of just made a nice uniform, and that was unexpected.
Do you see that, as we predicted a couple years ago, we're starting to see a trend back towards more simplistic-looking uniforms?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because they really had nowhere else to go. They had no choice but to go back the simple route. Either that or finally fulfill my dream with LED uniforms where they light up and everything else. Either you got to do that or you got to go back the other direction. This NFL thing, my understanding is that they did a bunch of work with these brains, I guess, and that like 99% of the brains that these scientists are working with came back from NFL players came back with CTE. That's bad, put it mildly.
You would think it's statistics and data that they couldn't ignore at this point, but you would have thought that years ago when this stuff first started coming out.
Well, playing devil's advocate for a second here. Now, were the brains that they used, were these all like players that their brains were donated because they'd had problems? Because that could certainly throw off the results.
Well, they were very open about what they were about the subjects that they were looking at the beginning. They are not trying to spin this as anything but what it was. They say flat out in the beginning, these are the brains of players who have been having problems.
Okay.
And we wanted to see if it was CTE. So
right.
They were very open and upfront about it.
No, and again, I'm not defending anybody or anything. I just, you know, it could be, that could be part of why the number was so high. I'm amazed now that 1% of the brains weren't, you know, like that guy must have been a punter or something, but I don't know what, I mean, what does the NFL do at this point? You know, we've everybody's had the discussion and I don't know how you solve this. Do we just sit back and say, this is the sport, this is the way it works, it's dangerous, and these things are going to happen to people that play it and be okay with that?
I don't know if you can be okay with it. It's just...
I guess I'm not okay with it, but just you just take it as, okay, this is part of the process, this is the way the game works. And
I think so, to an extent. You know, it's... The technology to try and properly... you know, protect players. Like they're always developing new helmets and new shoulder pads and all that sort of stuff. But I think we kind of knew this forever based on just the nature of the game. And you give players all this padding to make them feel invincible and go 100% full speed and go kill some, you know, try to kill each other basically.
Yeah.
Then you're gonna put yourself in the situation where this is gonna happen, as opposed to say like rugby, where there's not that padding, and players in that sport, yeah, it's physical, it's violent, but they play it in such a way that they have to protect themselves, they have to protect the other player.
That was my next question, because rugby was the example I was going to use. They wear essentially no equipment. And do they have the same problems? Does anybody know if they have the CTE issues that the NFL has? That's I think, a question that needs to be asked.
They have a little bit, just because, again, it's a you know, you get things like the whiplash and that sort of, but certainly not to the extent that you have in gridiron football.
So wouldn't the solution then be the one that I've been harping on all along, is that you don't want more equipment, you want less?
But they're never going to do that.
If you
tell somebody, hey, people are getting hurt because they're hitting each other too hard, the way to fix it, people are going to say, well, make them more padded so that they don't get.
Yeah, but it seems like it's gotten worse. Like, as helmet technology has developed, it's gotten worse and worse. Maybe not. Maybe it's just because we're paying more attention to it now. But it sure seems to me like the better we make the equipment, the worse things get.
Right, probably, yeah. But... as Zach said, it's a very bad PR move to be like, we're going to be taking away equipment. I honestly think...
if you take away the equipment, at that point, you're not playing football. Like, people aren't going to be watching. If you told somebody, okay, the NFL has to shut down, we're going to open up a rugby league.
Well, it would, but I'm not saying get rid of all of it, but I just don't know what you do for the solution. I mean, maybe it's just as simple as I said. You just go, this is football. And if I'm going to be a fan of it, this is what I have to put up with. I have to deal with the fact that we're probably killing these guys, or at least some of them anyway.
Maybe not today,
but down the road we are.
I think a lot of it has to do first, I think the NFL needs to stop fighting this research, because if I'm just going to be cynical about it and just be like, what should the NFL do for their best interests? A lot of the stuff isn't going away. Like, studies are going to keep being done, and eventually it's going to get to the point where you can no longer deny the data. So the NFL needs to stop fighting it, because if they stop fighting it, if they embrace it, if they say, okay, we accept this as part of the game, we are now going to try to work to cut down on it, then they have the perfect defense for themselves and their fans, which is, hey, we accept this, we embrace this research, everyone at this point is informed, and anyone who plays this goes in knowing the risks. And I think at that point, they can kind of diffuse a lot of their own PR problems. The problem I have with it isn't so much the NFL. I don't mean to sound callous about it, because, you know, yeah, you are watching these guys die. And again, I don't want to minimize that. But at the same time, as more of this stuff comes out, you can make the argument, okay, these players are going in knowing the risks. And hey, you know, you're an adult, you can make these choices on your own. The thing that I kind of have trouble with, as I kind of came to that conclusion, is the more I think about it, like, kids under the age of 18 probably shouldn't be playing the sport.
No, probably not.
Yeah.
But that's
I think that's the place to start with it, is definitely not have – because I think about it with, like, hockey, for example, right? There's no checking up until a certain age, right?
Yeah, yeah.
With football, I know they start kids with flag football, but the instant that they put pads on, not like they're telling them not to hit each other.
Yeah.
When I played football when I was in fifth and sixth grade, and obviously they don't do this anymore, but to give you an idea of how far we've come with this, one of our drills was to line up and bash our helmet into the other guy across from us. Like, that was a drill that we ran. You smacked your helmets together.
Okay, so as that was happening, was the coach yelling explosions in football?
I don't know what he was yelling, because I was like, okay, this is why I love baseball. And I was gone after that season, and I never played another down of football after that. But
no, I mean, we did it, too, in high school, because that's when I first started playing. You have a bunch of people that haven't played before. But you do that to get people used to the sensation of being hit.
Yeah, I guess.
You don't feel to be afraid when they're going to go in there and play. Like, you're going to get hit. It's just the nature of the game. You're going to get hit.
Yeah, and
get used to it.
But I think part of it too is that, you know, we assume that all this is happening once they reach the NFL. But my guess is that it's something that builds over time.
Oh, it definitely.
And the CTE started, you know, back way back in the eighth grade or whatever, and that we've just reached the culmination of it by the time they hit the NFL, where it's just a matter of it just keeps building and building and building.
You've seen quite a few guys already that have retired during their college careers,
yeah,
or immediately after their college career, because they feel like they've already added up too many too many concussions onto their brain.
And you have players who haven't played a down of football since high school who show symptoms of
right.
CTE. So it's not a case of just the NFL. I think – and this is the problem that I have with it. If you're going to inform everyone and say, you know, if you're over 18, you can do what you want, and if you know the risks, you know, no one can stop you, that's fine. But – like, all right, kids in high school, their brains are still developing. And I'm not sure that an institution such as a high school, which is supposed to be about educating these kids, should be sanctioning an activity that bashes their brains to mush. That doesn't seem right. And I didn't set out that idea saying, oh, I hate football, I want to take football down, but it was really just kind of a culmination of thinking, being like, well, all right, if NFL players are informed, you know, they're adults, they can make their own decisions, but, you know, we place limitations legally on what kids can do because we recognize they aren't old enough to make those informed decisions. And yeah, if we're going to be in the business of saying, you know, you can't drive or you can't buy cigarettes or drink alcohol until a certain age because we as a society have determined that you are not – that your body at this stage is too – that you're too immature to handle that, that it's not good for you at this age – then I think we need to have that conversation about football, because I don't see how taking kids in high school, you know, whose brains aren't fully developed, I don't see how mashing those brains to nothingness via football does them any favors.
I agree, but here's the, you know, you talk about that. If we put limitations on it up until they're 18, it changes the entire face of football.
Because now maybe the face of football needs to be changed.
I'm not arguing that point. I'm with you 100% on that. But the thing is, how are you, you know, you and I agree on this, but I'm in Ohio. You're in Florida. Mm-hmm. Zach's in California. And let's throw Texas in there too. Those are four states right there that you're never, I mean, high school football is huge in those places.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. The place I'm working at right now has a football stadium bigger than the football stadium at the place that I went to university at in Canada. Like, this high school, this private high school in Florida has a bigger football stadium than one of the top flight teams in Canadian college football.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Well, and I think we talked about it, I know, a year or two ago, that stadium that they built for the high school team in Texas. Would have been one of the nicest football stadiums I'd ever been to if I ever go to it. It was amazing. I think it was $60 million they spent on it for a high school stadium. Uh-huh. But that's the trouble we run into with this. I agree completely that we're not doing these kids any favor letting them go out and beat their brains out. And I've covered enough high school football, and you have too, Zach, to know that, yeah, it's not NFL level or even college level hits, but they're still hitting each other pretty darn hard out there on that field.
Yeah. Well, because the increases in the training and you know, the weightlifting and the speed training and
right.
all that sort of stuff, it trickles down. Like we talk about how fast and physical the game is at the NFL level. It's just as much or more so that way in college, and it's just that way and more so in high school. And in the high school game, you get this kind of weird thing where you have kids that are simply playing it to have fun, you know, and to be out there to play football. And then you have the other kids that are really, really good and train all the time, train through the summer, and they weightlift and they do speed training. So if you have that kid come and blindside some kid that's just out there for his PE credit,
right?
It, you know, you're going to get a pretty big collision, and one kid's going to be worse for the wear. But like the other problem is, though, when it comes to like picking an age to picking an age to make a cutoff as to when you can start playing or when you can start hitting, if you make it too soon, like say kids can't play until they're in high school, mm-hmm. well then you only have 4 years of high school to teach them how to you know, do proper tackling form and how to play the game properly before they go to a college level where guys are bigger and stronger. And if you do things incorrectly, you might get killed.
Yeah.
Basically, I kind of see it as sort of a culture thing, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I see the culture thing too, and I get that, but sometimes kids have to play the game to learn how the game is played.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes a while for that to get ingrained in some kids. Some kids pick it up super quick. Sometimes you could be, you know, you hear stories all the time of these guys that didn't start playing football until they were sophomores or whatever.
Right.
And they end up being, you know, these great college players. We have plenty of guys that are in the NFL that played basketball in college and end up being pretty decent NFL players. But that's for athletic positions, you know, but there are certain positions where there's a lot of time and education that goes into learning how the game of football is played and how to play it. Like a quarterback needs to play, like you're not going to find too many good quarterbacks that just started playing like halfway through high school.
Right.
Playing college.
I don't know there's a guy in the NFL at the quarterback position right now that you can tell the story he didn't start playing until his senior year.
Well, I guess
for the other side of it, you would say that about linebackers usually because they have to understand coverages and they have to understand how
they're really only a couple positions on the field that you can excel at by just being a pure athlete. I'd say running back probably.
Yeah, defensive line.
Maybe defensive line, maybe safeties. But the rest of it is you've really got to learn the position. You know, like a free safety is just kind of – I mean, they obviously need to learn a lot too, but there are positions out there. But the point is that it's just – to fix this, like Mike said, you've got to change the face of football. And I don't know if it can be fixed.
That's what I'm getting at is that, like – I mean, ideally I'd say basically you don't play football until college. And I know that fundamentally changes how football is played, not just how the developmental system works in terms of, you know, the feeder system to the NFL, but it fundamentally alters, like you said, Zach, of how people learn the game. And like, I guess it's getting to the point where maybe that needs to happen. Maybe that's just something that needs to happen because I don't,
It'd make football recruiting a lot more interesting.
Oh, it would.
Because then you'd be like, because instead of scouting these guys' football games, they'd be like, well, we have to go to track season and watch Sprinter.
So
wrestling season and watch who's the best heavyweight wrestler to see if he'd be a good lineman or something.
Hey, you know what? You know, scout and track meets, that won Al Davis at least one Super Bowl. So,
hey, I've scouted plenty of track meets, and I can tell you that don't do that. Mike, for my sake, I'd much rather watch a football game than I would a track meet.
I'm with you on that, believe me.
I can imagine that, yeah.
You think it's bad cover in one of those things, Zach? Try televising one sometime.
When you've got 35 things going on at once
and you don't know what any of them are.
There was a couple times where, like, some of these big track meets, they'll have a television crew, but they won't do it live because they know that they can't show it properly live.
No, you can't. There's no way.
They show it next weekend because they have to get it together, essentially.
We would tape it and then sit down and edit it later.
Yeah.
Because that's the only way you could do it. Trying to do it live would just be insane. Oh, there goes the pole vault. Wait, the race just started. Oh, hold on a minute. This guy, you know, you just can't. There's just no way. So, but back to the point, I think the interesting thing that's going to be here are how the parents react to this. You know, are the parents going to start suddenly saying, I'm not going to let you play football? And again, I think in Ohio and Florida, California, Texas, Pennsylvania, you're probably going to see more parents allowing it, but you might see places like, say, Indiana, where they grow basketball. Parents there might start saying, you know what? No. Or maybe not Wisconsin. Geez, with the Badgers and the Packers, I doubt it. I don't know. Football is so ingrained in the culture that it's going to be interesting to see if enough parents decide, no, my kid's not playing, that it makes any sort of a dent in things at all. That's where it's got to start.
Beyond that, too, like if we go about trying to change the face of football or change how the game is played and all that sort of stuff, at what point do you reach the point where it's not what football was and no one cares about it anymore?
Right. That's another thing. I mean, it's such a tough...
To make it completely safe and to make it good for everybody, and people, that this isn't going to happen, that you kind of, you know, I don't want to use necessarily this phrase because it has a whole sort of other connotations, but you neuter the game a little bit and then it's like, okay, this isn't exciting anymore. The things that people like about football, yes, people like seeing people score points and touchdowns and running fast, but it's a physical collision sport. That's what people get drawn into.
Well,
at a primal level of football, that's what gets people interested in the sport.
And if you're a fan, I mean, like Mike, let's say with the Chargers, you may not want to, but you love it when, like, a guy, I don't know who a good defensive player is for the Chargers these days, but I'll go back to what's his name.
There's not a lot.
But, like, Merriman or whatever his name was that played for the Chargers a few years back.
Yeah.
If he gets in and just lights up the Raiders quarterback, you're digging the shit out of that.
Here's the thing, though. Like, yeah, I did, but the more that comes out now, it starts, like, it used to be where it was a completely guilt-free experience where it was like, oh, hell yeah, like you just knock that guy on his ass. But now it's sort of like you still do it, but you think, oh, well, I know all of this horrible data that probably just contributed to. And it's
what I mean. It's tougher now, but I, like Zach said, with the primal thing, but this is what we grew up on. This is all still relatively new to all of us, this danger involved in it. And
the whole thing's hard.
It's a hard habit to break, first off, because you're used to it one way, and now you've got to look at it in a completely different light, which is hard to do, especially when you're caught up in the moment. Like in an Ohio State-Michigan game, I'm still thinking about it, but all of a sudden it's like, okay, I'll worry about this next week. You know, I don't know how to describe it, but it's...
But when it comes to fixing the game or trying to get this stuff out of it, I don't think there's any gray areas to be had. Like if you try to play both sides of this and give people the physicality, but also make it safe, you're going to get to this weird middle ground of football that isn't entertaining. You either have to just kind of let things play and let everyone know about the dangers and say, you accept all of the inherent dangers of playing the sport by accepting it and playing it. Or we end up having to play like 7-on-7 football.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that it's really the simple, there is no middle ground. You're right. we either completely change football or we accept it the way it is, because there is no medium fix in here. If you allow, if you continue to allow contact and you continue to allow hits the way they take place, then CTE is going to remain a problem.
And you, like, even in the NHL, another probably the biggest compare or the best comparison when it comes to collisions, things have been, they've done a good job at massaging the rule book and getting players to understand that you can't just, you know, kabong players anymore. But there's plenty of brain injuries that still go on that are completely incidental. They're not predatory. They're not
right.
They just happen. And if you allow football to continue to be the way it's played, you can legislate fines and you can make sure guys aren't killing guys over the middle, and you give them all the best pads and the protection. You're still going to end up having these incidental things happen.
Well, I mean, how many plays did we see just last year alone in college and the NFL where guys would get called on leading with the crown of the helmet, whatever, where you'd watch the replay and it was such a split second decision. I don't know that anybody can think that quickly, where you're coming in to make the play and it was obvious to me that the guy wasn't trying to lead with the crown of the helmet. That's just the way it turned out.
Yeah,
and that's exactly the point you're making, that even if you legislate against it, it's still going to happen. It's still going to happen. There's no way around it. So it's either it either becomes flag football, which no one's going to watch or care about, or we leave it alone because there is no middle ground as far as I can see.
I'm going to say right now that if you leave it alone and don't address issues, then issues like this, then it will die. It won't die now. It won't die overnight. It won't die in 10 years, but 30 years down the road, like football, the more that this stuff comes out, football will not be able to survive long term.
Well, I'm not saying you don't address it. I don't know what the solution is.
But when you think about it that way, it's this sort of stuff has happened forever. Like boxing was huge at a point, not more. I mean, yeah, you still have the big fights, and honestly, I don't know why there are big fights anymore.
Well, I think that your idea of a big fight and mine are completely different. Like these fights now that are supposedly big, I've never heard of.
Well, okay, but like,
to give you an idea of how big boxing was even just 30 years ago.
Sure.
Like a Sugar Ray Leonard Roberto Duran fight, that was huge. That was like at the level, I won't say Super Bowl level, but it was up there with like a big playoff game or a big college football game. It was right there. It was that important in the overall sports landscape. That's not the case anymore.
There's a whole lot of other factors that contribute to the downfall of boxing and the downfall of horse racing,
right,
or even the downfall of auto racing, you know, if you want to call it that. It's just, these things happen. Like it's kind of a miracle that some sports, like baseball, for example, it's a miracle that baseball has gone as long as it has without fundamental changes to how it's played.
But that's starting to catch up with it now, I think, in certain areas.
Yeah,
not enough yet to really worry about it, but
it's also not a blood sport like football.
No. Now the baseball's problem is that it's not exciting enough. There's not enough action. NFL doesn't have that problem, but I mean, going back to what Mike said, of course you address it. I just don't know what you do to fix it.
Yeah. I don't know. There's a reason that we don't still have gladiators and lions, right?
Yeah, they take the fun out of everything.
Incidentally, though, I think baseball has the most to gain from the NFL or football in general, I guess, sort of falling by the wayside, because baseball's numbers, people have been calling for the death of baseball for decades now, and it's still around, and it's actually a bit on the uptick. So I think baseball. I definitely think baseball has a brighter future, you know, in the moment than football does, unless football finds a way to address this CTE issue in a way that doesn't completely alienate everyone to the game.
Yeah.
Honestly, I really think the only way to fix football is to completely change it. To make it
right.
Like, would you would think, just based on how the games are played, you would think that somebody that likes football could also love rugby.
Mm-hmm.
Just because they're essentially the same thing.
Well, see, that's what I go back to, though, with the lesser equipment thing. I mean, is it, if we still wear the uniforms without the pads and play the exact same game, and the hitting's still there, the tackling's still there, it's all still there.
I think
they have to learn how to do it in a way where they're not killing themselves to do it. I
don't think you get less equipment so much as I think the best way to go forward with football equipment is to actually go a bit backwards. Like, give players helmets, you know, using helmet technology from, say, the 80s. And it's not going to be as high tech as the stuff now, but it won't have them feeling like they can just go full speed, you know, head first into someone.
Well, I ride motorcycles, and I promise you that an NFL helmet is much better protection for me on the road on a bike than a motorcycle helmet ever would be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just that big a difference.
But again, if we go to start playing the game like that, though, then I guess what's the point of being a physical game at all? Right? Like, you're when we talk about, like, not finding, like, a gray area, I don't think you can have a gray area in a physical sport like football where guys are going head to head.
Right.
Like, if you want to decrease the physicality, then you take out the offensive and defensive lines.
Yeah.
And you take out the ability to hit somebody to knock them down. Like, if you want to save football and make it a safe game to play, but still have the football aspects of it, then you have to play two-hand touch and 7-on-7 and or flag. Because,
well, I mean, football,
because some of the positions that have the worst of the CTE stuff
and
are the offensive and defensive lines.
Yeah, because they're doing it literally every play that they're on the field.
Yeah, they're butt heads 60 times a game.
Yeah.
For, you know, however many games over their career, not to mention the practices in between and training camps and everything else.
Yeah. I don't know what the answer is.
You have guys go over the middle that get a shoulder into the chest that hit head going down. Like, the only way to take it out is to – the only way to fix it that way is you can't just take away the equipment. If you want to play football like that, where you're doing the forward passing and these long plays – you have to do it like that.
Well, doesn't rugby? Doesn't really have like a long passing play like that, do they?
No, rugby, everything's backwards. There's no forward pass.
Yeah.
The only thing that's equivalent is they do kicks. Like, they'll kick it and then
right. So even using rugby as like a CTE comparison really doesn't work because it's fundamentally different game.
Yeah, I mean, essentially it's the same thing. You know, you have the same amount of players going head to head and scrums and
right.
The same shape of the ball, and it's the bare bones of it are there, but when it comes to throwing a ball, like, you don't have the equivalent of throwing the ball high over the middle
right.
to a guy that's running full speed one direction. You have another guy running full speed the other direction trying to hit that guy to either knock him down or prevent him from catching the ball and slamming him down in the ground.
Right, and even the little scrum things, when they start to play, that's not where they're lined up a couple yards apart. They run into each other. They're kind of... It's
yeah,
more sort of a wrestling match or something than it is. So right. I don't know. I think that you're probably right, Mike. I mean, I think the only way this thing goes is it just eventually dies off. Right?
I guess a question I have, what about positioning? Like, I know enough about football to know that the proper way that you're supposed to tackle, you're supposed to wrap them up at the waist,
right.
not drive your head into them. And I guess what I'm saying is, I guess football's best chance, if you don't want to eliminate the physicality, is to just teach proper positioning.
I agree with that, too.
Teach players how to tackle properly instead of launching themselves, you know, headfirst like a missile. Teach them how to wrap up properly or on the lines, get rid of the 3-point stance.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. But the thing is, you know, you're talking, well, that's something you can start at the lowest levels.
And they are doing that to an extent. It's something that's been passed through USA Football that these things have to be taught in a certain way. And You have to hit with the front of your face mask. You can't hit with any part that's above, you know, the crown of the helmet, as they would call it.
But you've also got to find a way, though. I mean, that's it's great to teach them how to tackle properly. And I think that makes the game better, too, because I can't tell you how many games I've watched where you see, like, defensive backs, even linebackers, just try to, like, shoulder a guy to bring him down, and he just keeps on going. I mean, good tackling makes better defense, if nothing else. But you've got to also find a way to take out the hits. I mean, the tackling, that's great. That's the first thing we need to do. But how do you get rid of the – I mean, it's still going to be the incidental stuff, and that's just going to have to be a risk we're going to have to assume, I guess. But how do you get rid of the – do you penalize guys if they do it the wrong way? I mean, how do you get rid of it? The improper stuff, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, the only penalty they have for that right now is that in college they have the targeting rule where you can't hit somebody head-to-head. And even that's not perfect because there's plenty of guys that get kicked out of games.
Yeah.
Well, I mean the NFL could probably do something like that if they cut down on the rest of the bullshit flags that they like to throw. Yeah. Like, I mean, I would be fine if you had a targeting rule in the NFL, but only if they promise to cut down on the holding and pass interference bullshit.
Well, like, Mike, you can't do that because then the referees can't control who wins or loses the game. Come on.
Well,
you're being silly here.
And actually, you know what? Now that I'm thinking about it a little bit, I think something that might help the game is if you took out a little bit of the rules and allowed for a little bit more contact.
I completely agree with that.
Like, do you know what I mean? We're like, if there's a guy on a passing route and you can, like, jostle him a little bit, you don't have to wait and then kill him when he gets the ball, but you can get your hands on him before the ball gets to him.
Yeah.
Like, basically remove the rules that they brought in 78 and you go back to that. Yeah.
Because, you know, if you have to, when the ball gets there, you have to hit him so hard that he loosens it up or something.
Yeah.
You don't want to just let the guy catch it, but you also don't want to let them go too far where they're basically, you know, handcuffing a guy, not letting him catch the ball. But I think if you allowed a little bit more contacts, you might be able to get away with some of the stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it certainly couldn't hurt. I think it would make for better football too, but it's just a thing where it's a serious, serious problem. And there doesn't seem to be any obvious solution at this point. So, you know, does the game just die out? The thing that troubles me about it is I don't know that most NFL fans, and I don't know, maybe college too, but I don't think they're going to be quite as, look at it quite the way we do, where we look at it and go, okay, I still enjoy this, but there are inherent problems with it. I'm just thinking that there's a lot of fans that I've run across, at least in this area, that are Browns fans. They couldn't care less.
Well, you know? I mean, you're definitely going to have that, but – and that's why I said I don't think football is going to die out overnight. But I'm thinking, you know, 30 years down the road, the more that we learn, the more studies are conducted, the more – I hate to say it, but unfortunately, the more players who show symptoms of this thing, you know, God forbid, pass away because of brain injuries – the more that stuff sort of builds up, I think you're going to start seeing that diehard pool die off. Like, okay, the current generation of NFL fans right now, I agree, by and large, probably doesn't give a shit. But in 30 years, when you have fans who have grown up entirely during an era where CTE research is conducted and easily referenced, I think that is going to be interesting to see what happens. And like, boxing didn't die overnight, but it was sort of a slow death. Like, I think Mike Tyson kind of killed it spectacularly, but it was already trending downhill before that.
Well, you know, I mean, I hate to say it, but if you want to speed this process along, the thing that has to happen is the thing that I'm still to this day amazed has not happened yet. Somebody has to die on the field on national television right in front of everybody. That rings the bell. That's like, okay, wait a minute. And I'm absolutely astonished that that's never happened. It's just, how could that even be possible? That all these NFL games we've played in all these years, however many years the league's been around now, and it's never happened. That's a miracle, right? You would think.
I mean,
Well, I mean, we had a guy die on the field back in the early, I remember this when I was a kid, the early 70s, but he died of a heart attack. Yeah. It wasn't like from a hit. But it's just, it's remarkable to me that it's never happened. But I think something like that probably kicks the conversation into high gear, because then the NFL has no choice but to say, okay, yeah, here we are.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to take someone dying necessarily, but like if you see someone who's permanently crippled as the result of a football injury, I think that could get people talking. Like, I don't, it's sad that it takes something that drastic, but
you know what though? That happened. Well, it's happened a couple of times. There was a guy for the Jets, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah, but I'm talking now because like 15, 20 years ago,
true,
we didn't have the
right.
same. We weren't talking
right.
about this
right.
stuff 15, 20 years ago. So
I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out, because that was some, again, like you said, Mike, they made no effort to hide the fact that the brains that they were testing were all players that had shown symptoms or mm-hmm. whatever. But still, for it to come back at 99%, I mean, that's not a lot of gray area. It's basically saying, okay, you know, if they're showing these signs, odds are overwhelmingly in favor of it being CTE, right? So mm-hmm. it's, I don't know, it's going to be very interesting to see how it plays out. And like Zach said, I don't know what you do. You either do you make the game to the point where nobody wants to watch it or what? I don't know what we do. I don't know.
I don't know either. But again, I think sooner or later, football is just going to peter off, probably not disappear entirely. Like, you're probably never going to get rid of football in Texas, for example. and again, you know, me saying, like, personally, I don't think anyone under the age of 18 should be playing football. Like, I believe that, but I don't think that's something that you can legislate, because it's too culturally ingrained in,
right.
in certain very populous parts of the country. And because of that, like, it's something that's going to fly. But I think over time, you're going to have more and more parents who aren't comfortable letting their kids play. You're going to have more and more people, you know, who grow up as sports fans after all of this information has come to light. And when that happens, I think the NFL is going to find itself struggling a bit.
That's right. I think you're right. I think it's going to start with the parents. That's where it will begin. And then we'll see where it goes from there.
Although apparently, who was it? Some former NFL commissioner is being kept out of Hall of Fame consideration for his role in kind of covering up.
Paul Tagliabue?
Yes, Tagliabue.
Really?
Yeah, apparently apparently some of the people who cast votes for the Pro Football Hall of Fame are holding it against him, because apparently he took steps to try to minimize early CTE research when people were first starting to look into this sort of thing.
Well, you know what they say, you got to protect the shield, right?
Mm.
Yeah.
Especially now that the shield is chrome.
Oh, not really, right?
No, on all the on the new NFL jerseys from Nike this year, it's kind of like this flex chrome NFL shield.
Oh, why? Okay. Anyway. Anyway, so yeah, that's where we're at with it, I guess. So I got nothing else. You guys ready to wrap it up?
Curling's time to shine.
Hell yeah, man. I'm down with that.
Curling, America's new pastime.
I like what you said on the boards. Soccer, America's sport of the has always been. I forget how you put it.
Soccer is America's sport of the future and always will be.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, people pushing that soccer is going. No, I'll tell you right now. Football might very well peter off and be replaced as America's favorite sport. It's not going to be soccer. It's going to be baseball. Outside chance basketball if they can fix their parity issues. But it's not going to be soccer. And I don't say that to be mean to soccer or the soccer people with your scarves. But it's just not going to happen. I'm sorry.
No, there was a soccer podcast I listened to a lot back in the day. I don't anymore. But their slogan was like – they were two British guys. The Men in Blazers. I don't know if you've heard of them, but like their tagline was always, you know, soccer, America's sport of the future since 1976.
I mean, people have been saying that since Pele, right?
Well, I mean, in soccer's defense, I don't think that it's a sport that, first off, it's just, I've said it before, in the United States, and probably Canada to an extent, too, when you've got hockey, basketball, and football, soccer's never going to be overtake those three. I think it's made great inroads over the years, and it's more popular probably now than it's ever been in this country, but like, it's going to reach a point. I think, like with the NHL, I think there's only so much... only so far you can go, and soccer's kind of there now. I mean, maybe it gets a little more popular, but if they're seriously entertaining the idea that soccer will be as popular as the NFL is right now, that's just never going to happen with any sport. I don't care what it is.
Well, yeah, and I think what's going to happen is what my prediction is that the NFL will probably fall in popularity, football will probably fall in popularity. I think baseball will replace it, but I don't think baseball will rise up above it so much as football will fall below it, because I think the NFL in its current state has sort of reached a level of popularity that's sort of ungodly.
Yeah.
And if the NFL falls from its current position, I think that'll be a level of popularity that no league, you know, we'll ever see again.
No, I mean, the closest thing we've probably ever had to this was baseball in the 20s and 30s. Mm-hmm. You know, when it was literally the only game. I mean, the NBA didn't exist yet. There was no NFL to speak
of. Hockey was a weird thing Canadians did.
And there were only six teams. Yeah, so, but now, no, it's kind of, in a way, it's kind of amazing the NFL's managed to keep as popular as it is with such a, you know, so many more things to divert your attention these days, but it ain't going to be soccer. And like you said, I think if baseball has got a real opportunity here, fix your pacing problems, make the game interesting again, and you never know. And basketball,
put in a pitch clock, and so many of baseball's problems get solved.
Oh, absolutely. I don't know if you've ever been to a minor league game with a pitch clock, but what a difference that makes. Oh, it's beautiful. And I'm a traditionalist, but I loved it.
I'm probably going to hit some of the minor league. I'm probably going to hit some of the spring training and minor league games coming up in the next few months here. I don't know. I'm looking to get into more and more baseball. I'm looking forward to exploring what Florida has to offer in terms of baseball.
Oh, good luck with that.
Well, no, I want to make it up to a Threshers game in Clearwater, for example, because
that is a beautiful ballpark they have there. It's incredible. One of my favorites, period. I'm talking like right up there with Camden Yards, Progressive, Comerica, whatever. It's right there. All right. Well, anyway,
anything's got to be better than Tropicana Field.
And anything is better than Tropicana Field. All right. Let's wrap it up, guys. We're going to call it a night. You guys know how it all works. Follow us on Twitter at Basically Sports. Subscribe via iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, and YouTube. And find us on Facebook. We'll see you next week.
See ya.
See ya.